Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. What's going on? What an amazing weekend that was. You had an incredible Saturday of college football. You had the best Sunday of the NFL season thus far. Carmelo Anthony got traded to OKC. And of course, you had the president taking the mic in Alabama and turning this sports show into a political show. We covered it extensively, and I'm happy with the conversation that we had. We also had three excellent guests. We had Mike Freeman. He came in to talk about the crazy weekend in the NFL. Ben Golliver broke down the Melo trade and Tennessee Titans linebacker. Wesley Woodyard came off that huge win over Seattle, and he broke that game down too. Alvy, roll it right now. You remember all that talk about how the NFL season had gotten off to such a boring start? Yeah, me neither. Because yesterday was unreal. I mean, hell, it started with the Rams-Niners shootout on Thursday and then continued right into the Jags de-pantsing of the Ravens in London. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers going legend once again. The Bears shocking the Steelers. The Giants shocking everybody by scoring multiple TDs. Matthew Stafford doing what Matthew Stafford does and getting Detroit the lead with 8 seconds to go, only to get it ripped away on review and then have that game end on a 10-second runoff. Loaded with content this morning. And that's exactly what I would be talking about if it were not for this.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. Fired!
Listen, I know that you're not tuning into this show for politics. This is a sports show. And I feel like I've got to say that now more than ever before. I would like nothing more than to talk about sports. But stick to sports, or sports is where I go to escape politics. It's gone when the president has taken to calling an NFL player or players exercising their rights, quote, a son of a bitch, and says that that player or players should be fired for it. Because if the president is going to talk sports and talk about it in those ways, then that leaves me no choice but to talk politics. I don't want to. I would like nothing better than to not talk politics today. I would love to be talking about what Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers did yesterday, or Eagles rookie kicker Jake Elliott with that absolute missile from 61 yards out to beat the Giants, or I don't know, maybe even get into the fact that Carmelo Anthony was traded over the weekend. I'd love to talk about all that, but I can't, not off the top, because it would be pretty idiotic to come in here, crack open the mic, and talk about the Raiders melting down in Washington, or the Thunder's offense this season, with everything else that we have going on now. Not when every single team took part in some sort of demonstration yesterday. And there are probably some of you, maybe many of you, who are not going to want to hear what I'm about to say, which is fine. So where do we start with the president's comments? First of all, what is the president doing talking about the NFL in the first place? I mean, seriously, on the list of important things for presidents to be concerned about, whether a football player stands or kneels for the anthem doesn't even crack the top 100. I mean, maybe you worry about North Korea or Puerto Rico, where millions of American citizens are without electricity, likely to be without it for months. I don't know, maybe Texas, maybe Florida. Or as Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith pointed out, this is the same guy who couldn't condemn violent neo-Nazis, but he's condemning guys that are taking a knee during the national anthem. End of quote. But again, he wasn't just done with those remarks in Alabama Friday. Then on Saturday, he tweeted, quote, if a player wants the privilege of making millions of dollars in the NFL or other leagues, he or she should not be allowed to disrespect our great American flag or country and should stand for the national anthem. If not, you're fired. Find something else to do. End quote. You know, then there's this notion, this idea that language like that, I mean, I gotta say, it's quite beneath the office. In fact, any office. If a high school principal said something like that, he or she would probably be fired. But there may be some of you who like that. There may be some of you who hear that and say, good, good, finally. Finally, somebody who is telling it like it is. And to me, it's garbage. And I'll tell you why. It's wrong on so many levels. This has always been about injustice, inequality, police brutality. And I think to try to conflate it with disrespecting the troops is either willfully ignorant or you're just trying to use it for political gain. I mean, even on some level, it's kind of idiotic. Or all three. Look, if you're offended by an athlete taking a knee for the national anthem, that's fine. I get that. You have that right. I understand why you might be offended. The point of nonviolent protests is not to make people feel comfortable, but to make people feel uncomfortable, to get people's attention, to say, look, there's something wrong here. I understand why someone kneeling during the national anthem or remaining in the locker room during the national anthem might offend. But are you also offended by the deaths of countless young African-American males at the hands of police officers? I mean, I would hope so. If you're not, then you're probably offended by the wrong things. But then, don't take my word for it. For instance, listen to Julius Peppers.
The military, disrespecting the flag, police, first responders, none of that. It wasn't about that. It was about me making a decision as a man on my 2 feet. I don't want to ask nobody else to do anything with me. But I just thought it was appropriate to stay in because we know what went on this week with the comments that were made by the president, you know, and I felt like he attacked our brothers, my brothers in the league. So I felt like it was appropriate to stand up with them and say in the locker room, I'm doing things that I feel like are right, and things that I believe in. There's only a few times in a man's life where you have a chance to stand up for something that you believe in and make a statement. So today I thought that was that chance and I took it.
Lots of players around the league saying things like that. And keep in mind, the protests had pretty much died down. They had died down. And it wasn't until the president said what he said on Friday that all of a sudden you had this kind of reaction. And in fact, literally this entire reaction this weekend was in response to that. And there were plenty of other players too. Josh Norman of the Redskins had this to say on the field right after the game.
You know, sky's the limit. I think that's just one, you know, demonstration. I feel just we had to do, but just because of, you know, the tyranny that we face behind the POTUS, you know? And it's sad that we have to go through stuff like that, but at the end of the day, we unite as one, nobody's gonna divide us. And that's what we came out here and we proved today. We had our owners, everybody down from the personnel department, lock arms, that's brothers in arms, letting them know we will not be taken down.
Quote, tyranny behind the POTUS. He called him a tyrant. And then that continued in the locker room after the game, where Josh Norman became even more emotional.
You have to stand for something. You fall for nothing. You have to. And when a man calls you out like that, behind the POTUS, it's supposed to be the president of America. It's supposed to be. Calls you out like that as a group, and there's more things going on in this world. That's personal. That's coming for you. I mean, I'm all cool. You know, you give people the benefit of the doubt. But when you come at that angle in that direction, directly at you, nah, man. One brother, you mess with one, you mess with us all. Don't nobody is divided in this. We was in unity. We wanted to stand for something. Just telling you right now, this man's not welcome here in Washington, D.C. He's not. I hope he don't be around when I see him. He's not welcome. I can say that to your face. You're not welcome here. You picked on the wrong people. Sorry, man, but it's just being honest. I respect the office. I respect the troops of America. My family fought in the war. And I'm putting myself out there. I'm standing. I ain't about to stand for nothing else than this. What you see right now, man, that's just disrespectful. It's appalling, man. How you call somebody SOB? How you call somebody that?
That's Josh Norman. And I want to jump in there because there's a lot more that came from a lot of different athletes. Listen, I understand there's a group of you that does not want to hear this. The group that thinks that I am saying this to be PC or that I am virtue signaling or whatever terms you want to use to disregard something that either is tough to hear or you just don't agree with. But there's a problem here. It's being pointed out by these men who you root for and cheer for. And while I only played two, there were plenty of more comments like that. They're trying to tell you about their experiences. They're trying to tell you what it's like to grow up as African-American men in this country and the fears that they have for themselves and their children. And some of you are telling them to shut up. That you don't want to hear it. Or some of you are saying it's not a problem. Or some of you are saying that it's a problem, but if it is, it's all their fault. Pointing out that there's a problem, to me, is not divisive. Claiming that there is no problem is. Lots to talk about with Mike Freeman. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Jim, just another quiet weekend in the NFL.
Not much going on, right, Mike? Nothing to talk about? Nice. Not much going on? Mike, go back to last weekend before we talk about this weekend. Mike, how about last weekend? At that point, last weekend, what was your sense as to the feeling among the players around the league when it came to protesting social injustice during the national anthem? At that point last weekend, Mike, how much interest was there still in it?
I think there was. It was dying, Jim. Last weekend, it was. There were only a handful of guys willing to do it, and it was something that was pretty much going away, which is what makes. I know we're going to get into this weekend, but what the desired effect that Trump had backfired, because it was players were no longer going to do it. It's not to say that they weren't upset about things, or it just sort of fizzled out, and they were sort of just moving on, and they were probably going to do things on their own, sort of with charity work and some other things, and they weren't losing sight, but they weren't going to take a knee. They weren't going to sit. And they certainly weren't going to stay in the locker room or things like that. And then I can't tell you, Jim, after Trump made his comments, I mean, I got texts from members of the union and some players, and they were just outraged. And it just mushroomed so quickly, and I've never seen anything like it, and I've never seen the player base this unified over anything. I mean, there were two strikes in the 80s, they weren't unified. Lockouts, they weren't unified. So many other things, and they've never been this singular for the most part. I mean, there are exceptions, but for the most part, you're talking like 99% of the players right now are just fired up. So the desired effect that Trump wanted didn't happen. It unified people on the field, in the locker room. Now, what it does to America is different, but with the players, they are more unified. They've been covering the league a long time. They're more unified than I've ever seen them, and so, you know how it is.
Yeah, Mike, let me ask you this. I mean, it would seem pretty self-evident, but of all the things, and you've covered that league a long, long time, this is the one thing that unified them, galvanized them more than anything that you could point to. It would seem self-evident, but why? Why were they so angry? Specifically at what?
They were angry at being basically told to just shut up and play, that you're not allowed to have an opinion. You're not allowed to be upset over very critical social justice issues that are important to you and people you know in your lives. That was it. It was the SOB. That was part of it, obviously. I'm sure you've seen it and talked about some of the very emotional things players have said from the weekend. So it's more about that they were treated like they were not human beings, not American citizens, but something to be scorned and to discuss people, to look at people, to view players. Trump tried to have Americans view players as not American. And that is the real crux of why they got upset, because these guys, Jim, you've been in locker rooms, you know how this works. These guys, there are of course some bad guys and some clowns. That's in every profession, but most of these guys I've dealt with over the years are just really normal, good people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what really fired them up, is being portrayed as not like the rest of us, not Americans, and sort of scoffing at their individuality.
Mike Freeman joining us. He's a Bleacher Report NFL national lead writer. Mike, Trump has tried to argue that his comments have nothing to do with race. Do you think the players buy that?
No. I mean, they think it's all about race. And, I don't know how you how you can argue with them. It is. I mean, we can go down the list, but I don't know if we need to do that, or things Trump has said that have been race-based. So players have every right to think that on this issue. Not to mention, he said that NASCAR, like, they're great in NASCAR. I mean, you know, NASCAR, the membership and viewership is a little different from the membership and viewership of the NFL. But the players don't buy that by any stretch. And they've pretty much kind of said that point blank. And that's where this really, I think, also took another turn. You were asking me about why they're really upset. I think that's another core part of this. They thought they were being singled out because the league is 67, almost 70% African-American. So they thought that was a part of this, too, and that also angered them. So they don't buy it at all, Jim.
Now, Mike, your Twitter feed probably reads a lot like my Twitter feed. So you've seen this. What would you say to somebody who says that the national anthem is not the time or the place to protest?
Well, I'll tell you what players say, Jim, and I'm sure you know this, but for people who don't quite get it, and what players say is that they're not disrespecting the military. Somehow it's been morphed into that. They're not disrespecting first responders. Somehow that became a part of this. They're not disrespecting the flag or the country. They're using the moment to draw attention to a social issue that's important to them. That's pretty much as simple as it gets. It's been done many times in American history. You use a moment of high visibility to make people aware of what is a plague, what you see as a problem. So that's what they would say, and I agree with them. And I'd also say to the people, you've been to stadiums, Jim, you know how it works when the national anthem is being played and what fans are doing. There's fans, like, going to the bathroom, talking on their phones, going to buy hot dogs and beer. A lot of people don't even pay attention to the national anthem. It's become this sort of crazy political thing. But players, their main message is they're using it to make people think about what they're doing. And I think it's been successful. I think what Colin Kaepernick did was really, really brave and really successful. It's also become polarizing, there's no question. But it's raised awareness to what originally Kaepernick was protesting and what the players are protesting now.
Mike Freeman is our guest. And Mike, you made the point also that NFL players are not like NBA players. How are they different?
Well, they haven't been until now. They don't realize the power they have. NBA players know they're the stars, and they act like they're the stars, as they should. They know they have the power. LeBron James, as you pointed out, called the president a bum. I mean,
is that incredible? I haven't done that whole take yet, Mike. But I mean, can we just step back from that for a minute? That this guy broke out on social media, you know, arguably the most influential player, best player of a generation, and hit the president with a "you bum" blast. It's incredible.
It was a pretty remarkable moment.
It was.
And it shows, I mean, look, other, you know, in the NBA, I mean, in the NFL, there were guys that called the president. But this guy, as you point out, is one of the most important players we've ever seen in the history of sports. And he felt comfortable enough to say that. And that is one of the differences. There's no fear in the NBA. They have guaranteed contracts. They know that they're the power. And in the NFL, there is still the mentality, and I don't necessarily blame them for having it because they don't have guaranteed contracts, Jim, as you know.
Sure.
And the owners treat them like they are replaceable. And that mentality hasn't been broken yet, and that's the difference between the two sports.
So do you think it might be a turning point in terms of how NFL players wield this power?
I think it'll start it. And I think where you really see it is you're going to see it off the field with players doing more social work, more work towards raising awareness towards this issue that they're protesting, and they're going to start standing up more to the president. And I think they're going to see them start to just get tired of being treated like they're robots. So they'll start, I think they'll start wielding that power a little more, but they got a long way to go because there's still that feeling of if I'm an interior D lineman, they can just get rid of me. They'll bring in another guy. Even though that's harder to do than they think, there's still that mentality, but I think it's starting to break. And one of the things you're going to see is I think you might see NBA players and NFL players sort of come together. I've heard a lot about that, really sort of forming a union, not a literal union, but just them coming together and bridging this gap and working together to sort of fight on social justice issues.
Not content with just taking a run at NFL players, Donald Trump then took time out of his day on Saturday to tweet the following. Going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry is hesitating, therefore, invitation is withdrawn. Again, he took to Twitter with that. Ripped an invitation on Twitter. That, of course, comes on the heels of the news that the Warriors were going to meet as a team to discuss whether or not they would attend the White House. And Curry said on Friday that he was going to vote that they not attend. And it created quite a firestorm. How big? Big enough that a 10-time All-Star was traded, and that story vanished without a trace. The Warriors responded with a statement that read, quote, "While we intended to meet as a team at the first opportunity we had this morning to collaboratively discuss a potential visit to the White House, we accept that President Trump has made it clear that we are not invited. We believe there is nothing more American than our citizens having the right to express themselves freely on matters important to them. We're disappointed that we did not have an opportunity during the process to share our views or have an open dialogue on issues impacting our communities that we felt would be important to raise. In lieu of a visit to the White House, we have decided that we will constructively use our trip to the nation's capital in February to celebrate equality, diversity, and inclusion, the values that we embrace as an organization." End quote. And then there's Steph. Here's what Steph had to say about it on Saturday.
I opened up Twitter, saw what he said, and it's kind of crazy because knew going into it today was a big opportunity for us as a team and organization to kind of talk about what the situation was. And like we've all said all summer, you know, Bob said it, Joe said it, Coach Kerr said it, we were going to talk about it as a team today. It's kind of funny that that tweet was sent before we had a chance to get together as a team. So it is what it is. My stance is the same as it was yesterday, and even kind of cemented even further about how things have in our country have gone, especially with him, you know, representing us, and for me not in a very damaging way. But you know, we have an opportunity still in February to figure out what we're going to do to celebrate the championship, and that's what this is about. That's why we're having this conversation, because we want a championship, and that's the position we're in, and we want to take advantage of that opportunity, and we will.
Steph Curry on Saturday. You know, I'm not sure what's more bizarre. The president tweeting about White House visits or the president trying to rip an invitation from somebody who didn't want to come in the first place. Chris Paul tweeted, "With everything that's going on in our country, why are you focused on who's kneeling and visiting the White House? Hashtag stay in your lane." He then chased that with, quote, "And I doubt he's man enough to call any of those players a son of a bitch to their face." Bradley Beal pointed out the other issue. How are you going to withdraw an invite that somebody already said that they weren't attending? Kobe Bryant weighed in. Kobe tweeted, "A POTUS whose name alone creates division and anger, whose words inspire dissension and hatred, can't possibly, quote, make America great again." So there was a large group of NBA players who came pretty strong on Twitter, but nobody brought the heat like LeBron James. At King James tweeted, and I quote, "You bum. Stephen Curry already said he ain't going, so therefore ain't no invite. Going to White House was a great honor until you showed up." He then followed that up with a video on Uninterrupted.
You know, I think it's basically at a point where I'm kind of, you know, just a little frustrated, man. Just because this guy that we've put in charge has tried to divide us once again. And obviously, we all know what happened with Charlottesville and the divide that caused. And now it's even hitting more home for me now even more because he's now using sports as the platform to try to divide us. We all know how much sports brings us together, how much passion it has, how much we love and care, and, you know, the friendships and everything that it creates. And for him to try to use this platform to divide us even more, it's not something I can stand for, and it's not something I can be quiet about. You look at him asking, you know, the NFL owners to get rid of players off the field because they're exercising their rights, and that's not right. And then, you know, when I wake up, I see that a colleague of mine has been uninvited of something that he said he didn't even want to go to in the first place, you know, to the White House. You know, that's just something I can't stand for, man. And we got, you know, Jameel Hill and Colin Kaepernick, and, you know, all these people are speaking up, and, you know, it's for the great of cause. It's for us to all come together. It's not about a division. It's not about dividing. We, as American people, need to actually just come together even more stronger, man, because this is a very critical time, and me being in the position I am, I had to voice this to y'all.
And I respect it, too. I respect that. But let's take one step back and let what just happened truly soak in. The four-time MVP, one of the greatest players in NBA history, called the president a, quote, bum. I mean, that's an amazing moment in history. Marinate in that for a while. Arguably the most dominant player since 45. Just glossed President 45, a bum. Welcome to 2017, y'all. The president is tweeting about sports, and one of the greatest to lace him up is calling him a bum. What a time to be alive. I mean, there have been plenty of great tweets in the history of www.twitter.com, but it's nearly impossible not to start with one that starts with "you bum." I mean, that's amazing. And it's worth noting that it's not like LeBron and Steph are tight. Quite the opposite. Steph beat him for a pair of rings and MVP trophies, which shows how much this whole thing is bothering LeBron. That said, and let me make this very, very clear to you clones, I'm speaking to a large group of you now, directly. Just because the three-time NBA champ called the president a bum does not mean that bum smack is back. It's not back. Not now, and it never will be back. So I do not want to see any tweets about the president using a pizza box as a briefcase, nor him using a shrimp as a Bluetooth, nor will he be stealing bread from ducks. He's not using a shopping cart as Air Force One. He's not using a deflated football as the nuclear football. He's not using a phone booth as the Situation Room. He will not be wearing a croissant as a bow tie at state dinners or baked potatoes as slippers. He will not be using an old phone book as a teleprompter, a newspaper rack as a podium, or a trash can lid as the presidential seal. He's not going to steal brochures from a hotel and call them his, quote, presidential library. He won't be using a bird bath as the reflecting pool or an old mattress as the Lincoln bedroom. He will not be referring to an underpass as the West Wing, a traffic circle as the Oval Office, or a McDonald's dumpster as the Rose Garden. Stop. Knock it off. Again, there's nothing funny about mental illness, poverty, or any of the other issues that contribute to chronic homelessness. There's nothing funny about somebody taking bread from ducks in order to eat. Bum smack is not back. It's never coming back. No matter who calls who a bum, it's over. Stop. Move along. Nothing to see. It's not back. Ben Golliver is my guest. Quite a weekend, though, in sports, all kidding aside. So much news to the point that Carmelo Anthony being traded to OKC is almost lost in the shuffle. Starting with that trade, what was your reaction when it first went down?
I think it's a great escape hatch for him. You know, it's kind of been brewing for a few years. He's a guy who just can't be the number one option to carry a team anymore. It was patently obvious in New York. I mean, they were just really been bad for a couple years. And I think he was standing in front of Kristaps Porzingis, too. I mean, there was a clear kind of handing of the baton that needed to happen. As long as Melo was there, it just wasn't going to happen. So I think, you know, if you're a Knicks fan, you're happy that it's Porzingis' team. You know you're going to struggle this year with the youth movement, but at least you have a direction going forward. But more importantly for the Thunder, I think it's a pretty worthwhile gamble just because they didn't really bet that much. You know, it's going to be pretty expensive. You know, Melo is more, you know, it's more salary, more luxury tax for their ownership to pay. But in terms of sliding him into a role, he doesn't have to be the main guy. He can help with their shooting and their spacing, which was definitely a weakness last year. And the most important thing to me is just the takeaway from their season was Russell Westbrook needed help. He can't do it by himself. You're never going to beat teams like Houston, San Antonio, Golden State with a one-man show. And Sam Presti went out this summer and added, you know, two all-star caliber players with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. To me, that counts as a lot of help.
Ben Golver joining us. All right, so if you're Billy Donovan, Ben, what would be your biggest concern now that you have two rather significant new pieces in George and Anthony?
I think it's all about keeping Paul George involved. I think Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony are just sort of wired to get the ball up. They're going to get their shots and touches one way or the other. It's that classic Chris Bosh syndrome of you have to make the guy who does the dirty work on defense, who does a lot of the little things, who might not be the first person to get, you know, shots and touches. You have to keep that guy happy and engaged because it's going to be a very difficult balancing act. I don't envy Billy Donovan, by the way. I mean, this trade happens, you know, right before training camp. They're going to have to figure it out on the fly. And when you're looking at the kind of teams that they're targeting, like Golden State, they bring everybody back. San Antonio is bringing everybody back. Even Houston, who added Chris Paul. I mean, James Harden and Chris Paul have been working out together all summer. I mean, those guys have already kind of got a head start. So it's going to be tricky and probably a little bit slow going for Oklahoma City early on. But I think what they really are going to want to preach, ironically, because they have all this star power, is defense. I mean, their defensive ceiling is very high with this team. Paul George, Andre Robertson, Steven Adams, all those guys are plus defenders. Now you've got some, you know, a good balance with the scorers to kind of, you know, take them over the top. But I kind of like where Oklahoma City is. I still think they don't have the depth really to join the Western Conference's top tier. But I think we got to give Sam Presti a lot of credit for turning a couple role players who really weren't going to play big minutes in the playoffs into a guy like Carmelo Anthony who could swing a series.
All right, so where does that leave him, for instance? I mean, you wrote, quote, the 33-year-old forward is an unapologetic ball stopper and lackluster defender who, despite being four seasons past his prime, is set to make $26.2 million this season. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. So exactly what are they getting in Carmelo Anthony, and could they finally unlock the Olympic Melo in the context of the NBA?
Well, this is an awesome chance for Carmelo Anthony to prove me and you wrong, Jim. I mean, this is the opportunity for him to kind of come back at people who criticized his game in the past and to say, look, I can be a team player. I can be a guy who thrives in catch-and-shoot situations. I can be a guy who stands in the corner while Westbrook does his thing, and then once the ball gets kicked out to me, I can be a secondary offensive threat. And most importantly, he can show that if he plays on a winning team and he's playing on a team that is actually going somewhere, that he's willing to commit defensively. I mean, it was something that Phil Jackson was like practically begging him in public to do for years. It never really happened in New York. And I think Carmelo's defenders will say, look, it's hard to play defense when your team's going nowhere. You know, it's like, what is your motivation if you know you're not going to make the playoffs, if you don't have enough talent around him? And I think now there's some serious pieces around Carmelo Anthony. It should put him in position to succeed. And he needs to kind of take the ball and run with it. And we said a lot of these same things, by the way, about Dwayne Wade last year when he was going to Chicago. It was a better opportunity for him. Some veterans, you know, like Rajon Rondo and Jimmy Butler should bring the best out of him. And at times, I think his defensive efforts still waned, and it probably wasn't quite enough or where Chicago needed it to be. It's harder when you're past 30 to keep up, and this guy needs to recommit and try to rewrite a new reputation for himself. So he's not that guy who is just sort of a disappointment in New York.
Ben Golver joining us. All right, so what kind of a message does the trade send Russell Westbrook and Paul George as they start to think about their futures?
Well, I think from Presti's standpoint, their GM, I thought it was a brilliant move because, look, it puts a little bit of pressure here on Westbrook to take the extension because if he doesn't, yeah, Presti can kind of look around and say, guys, what more did you want me to do? I turned two guys you've never heard of into Paul George, and I turned two other guys you've never heard of into Carmelo Anthony. I mean, I got him the help that he needed. I think it represents a new opportunity for Westbrook to answer his critics who are saying, look, he's not really a natural playmaker. He's not a pass-first point guard. He just wants to get his numbers. I think it's a pretty clear criticism that would, you know, kind of develop or a backlash after a triple-double season, given how they lost so quickly in the playoffs. So I think there's chips on everybody's shoulders. For Westbrook, he can show he's a better leader, not just a one-man show, that he can actually lead a winning team. For Paul George, it's an opportunity to get back to where he was earlier in his career with the Pacers when they were going to the conference finals, and to show that he's not the guy who was pouting for a lot of last season. And I think for Carmelo Anthony, like I said, it's just an opportunity to rewrite his reputation. And he's had a lot of squandered years. And I think this is going to be a really interesting, really intriguing, and also a meaningful year. I mean, these guys are going to be playing important basketball games. And last year, none of them really did that.
Hey, man, we made light at the top of the interview about Star Trek. But, you know, back to Donald Trump for a minute. I mean, he uninvited the Warriors to the White House. Putting that aside for a minute, what did you make of LeBron jumping on Twitter and calling the president, quote, "you bum"? I mean, that was quite a moment in social media history. What was your reaction when you saw that tweet?
Man, right at his throat. It's crazy. I mean, part of me says, okay, good for you for speaking your mind. And part of me thinks, like, are we all just getting dragged down into this, you know, part of society where we're just name-calling and it doesn't really advance the issue? I think, in general, the NBA has definitely been leaders on this issue. Their players have been out front about the free speech. I mean, my takeaway from the whole back and forth, though, I really think the Warriors kind of laid a trap for Trump. I don't know if you had that same thought, but there was clearly a staring match. Like, they didn't necessarily want to go. You're never going to convince me guys like Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala, and Kevin Durant were going to show up in the White House and shake hands with Trump. I just can never have seen that happen. But if you go to the President of the United States and you basically turn him down, you could look like the bad guy. There could be some people who seize on that and say, hey, you're anti-patriotic, you don't respect your country. And that could have been a real, you know, delicate situation for the Warriors. Instead, you know, Steph Curry sort of says his piece. Donald Trump responds and says, you can't come. And now everybody, and all the focus is on Trump. Now LeBron's going at Trump. All these other players are going at Trump. And it really becomes about his decision rather than the Warriors' decision. So it kind of felt to me like Golden State laid a little trap. They kind of gave him the ball and said, hey, what are you going to do with it? And of course, Trump was ready to kind of, go right back at them, and he kind of fell into their trap, I think.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know if they sprung a trap per se. I mean, possibly, but I think that these guys were kind of on record. They were critical before this, and it would have been very difficult for them to go. But the Warriors would have you believe, and I agree with this. They said, look, we're going to talk about this. We don't know whether or not we can go there, whether or not it makes sense. And maybe if we do go there, we might have some objections, but maybe we can have a meaningful dialogue. But then he ripped the invite. It kind of felt to me, Ben, like that coaching candidate who's up for a job, who knows he's not going to get the job, and then takes his name from consideration. Yeah, I don't want to work there because you found out that you're no longer under consideration.
I hear you. To me, though, it's like, can you even imagine those guys having that conversation after what's happened in our country? And that was why I always kind of doubted that, you know, if Golden State was really ever sincere with it. I think they were just trying to delay and delay and delay and hope that the situation would resolve itself. I mean, they had all summer to think about what they wanted to do. And it's just so hard for me to see, like, you know, Steph Curry, what's he going to do? Like, tell Donald Trump about North Korea? I mean, these guys aren't going to be talking about the substantive issues. And to be honest, does Donald Trump want to hear from NBA players about the issues that are important to them? I think that's an open question at this point. And certainly his track record recently in terms of what he said about NFL players leads me to believe, you know, he wouldn't really care to have that conversation. So I think it's probably best for everyone that there's not going to be this sideshow. And again, I really just go back to this idea that there's no way for me to envision, no matter how much I might hope for it or how much Adam Silver kind of hoped for it, or maybe the Warriors said that they hoped for it, where there was going to be a productive summit. I just can't see it.
There's certain things you can do and you can't do. Like, take the Giants. Wild day for the Giants. And by wild, I mean another crappy day. They entered yesterday's NFC Eastern showdown in Philadelphia 0-2. They hadn't done jack offensively. The head coach was taking runs at the two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback publicly. Even JPP, before that game, called it a must-win. A must-win. So then they go out and they get shut out for three quarters. They explode for 24 in the fourth, and they still manage to get their hearts ripped out by a rookie kicker hitting the longest kick in Eagle history. 0-3, DOA, dead on arrival. But at least Odell Beckham Jr. is feeling better physically. And once again, Odell Beckham Jr. is doing Odell Beckham Jr. things. And I don't mean two more miraculous TD grabs. I mean crawling around in the end zone on all fours and lifting his leg. You know, the old urination celebration. and the automatic flag and 15 that comes with the urination celebration.
Manning back to throw, looks, lobs one right into the end zone for Odell, who makes the catch and he gets the feet down. No signal yet. Yes, touchdown.
Toe drag swag. He got him in.
Now, well, I don't know what that celebration was.
Yeah, they're debating whether or not they should drop a flag on it, and they both did. That's just dumb.
Oh, Odell,
that's
what are you
dumb.
Thinking? Now, there's a flag
just
on
dumb.
The far side. I think the
they all did
was
the
offside.
Same thing. He's going to act like a dog and pee on it. That's just not – it's dumb, Odell.
Giants radio, quote, that's dumb. That's dumb. Quote, he's going to act like a dog and pee on it. That's dumb. So they immediately throw the flags on his urination celebration. Nobody thought that was funny, well, except for Odell, who not only thought it was hilarious, but he insisted that it motivated and inspired his team, that it got the Giants going. He said as much. And not only was he not apologizing for it, he made it sound like he was going to do it again. He said, quote, when I get in the end zone, I'm going to do what I do. Remember, these statements were made after the game. When I get in the end zone, I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to try to spark this team, and the consequences are going to be what they are. It's like you have to deal with the consequences, and that's something I can take. Our team, we were motivated from there. I don't think it set us back any. I just don't think we finished. End quote. Stay strong, ODB. It doesn't matter what the officials think or that your coach hated it. You just have to do you, right? And in so doing, you got to raise that bar. You can't stop there. I agree. You can deal with the consequences. You got broad shoulders. You don't stop there. If your team was as hyped as you say it was on you lifting your leg on the field or a fire hydrant or wherever you were urinating, next time you got to go one better. Next time, bring one of those little green plastic baggies that dog owners carry and drop a growler or two in the end zone. Then scoop it up like a responsible dog owner and put it in the bag. You've done doggy one. Now it's time to raise the bar and go doggy two. And better yet, next time you score, instead of doing it, just run a dog onto the field and let the dog do it. Just teach that dog to drop growler on cue. And that'll inspire all 53 of you and the coaching staff, right? And that's what you're there to do. Lift everybody up, inspire everybody, and make everybody around you better. Remember the run the Giants went on after he proposed to that kicking net? You guys just don't get this guy. Hey, look, I'm all about guys expressing themselves. Nobody hates the No Fun League more than me. I mean, I just made the point that throwing a flag at Von Miller for going with that too slow psych handshake is the worst call I've ever seen. I hate the No Fun League. I love the NFL, but I hate the No Fun League. But there's nothing really fun about crawling around in the end zone and urinating on it, especially during a loss. His explanation was, look, I'm a dog. I'm a dog, so I'm going to do what dogs do. All right, fine. Next time, invite the other 10 dogs in, the 10 that also did their jobs to help put you in the end zone, and then let them urinate all over the end zone too and stop making it about yourself. Maybe let Coach Ben McAdoo come in and lift his leg on the goalpost. I mean, are we really having this conversation about the right to urinate in the end zone? Oh no, I'm just going to keep doing me. Of course, that's what you get with Odell. You get the whole package. You get a superstar. You get a guy who can do things that nobody else can do. And then you get all that baggage, because that's not going to change for anyone or anything. He said so. So get your popcorn ready, because dude's clearly not done. In fact, you know anything about this guy? He's starting to feel better physically, so he's going to make more plays, and he's just getting started. There's going to be more of this in the weeks to come. Never mind that their season is already dead on arrival. They're done. They're 0-3. They still can't pass protect. They still can't run block. They're done. They're dead on arrival. But at least that being said, we can still look forward to more moments like this.
Manning back to throw. Looks. Lobs one right into the end zone for Odell, who makes the catch and he gets the feet down. No signal yet. Yes, touchdown.
Toe drag swag. He got him in.
Well, I don't know what that celebration was.
Yeah, they're debating whether or not they should drop a flag on it, and they both did. That's just dumb.
Oh, Odell,
that's
what are
dumb.
You thinking? Now there's a flag just on dumb. The far side. I think the
they all did
was
the
offside.
Same thing. He's gonna act like a dog and pee on it. That's just not. It's dumb, Odell.
Carl Banks, former New York Giant great. Carl Banks was not having any of that.
He started that off by giving him all sorts of love. The toe drag, the swag. He made that play. Oh no. Oh no. What is that? That's dumb. That's just dumb.
I'm not going to argue with Carl Banks, the guy who won a couple of rings, especially when he's right. I know what it's not. I know it's not smart. But again, Odell makes it sound like we don't get it. We're the ones that don't get it.
I didn't know if the rule book said you can't hike your leg. He said I peed on somebody, so I was trying to find the imaginary ghost that I peed on, but I didn't see him. But either way it goes, you play football. I wear red and white. I don't wear black and white with stripes on it. I don't make calls. I just play football.
Wesley Woodyard is my guest. Wesley, good to have you back. How are you?
Good to be back, Jim. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good. I'm great. It's great to hear your voice. Wesley, thanks so much.
I feel like we're family. We talk all the time.
Wesley, we've talked for a long time. You and I go way back. You and I go way back. And I appreciate you, fam. Thanks for making time for it. You know, I had Brian Arakpo on the show, Wesley, last week, and we talked about how the win over Jacksonville felt like Titans football, and then you go out and you beat the Seahawks in another very physical game. So how great is victory Monday after a win like that against a quality team like that?
Man, like the old ball coaches say, the grass is greener, the sky is blue, and you know what is better. But, man, it's a good victory for us. We're coming off of a good road victory in Jacksonville, and then finally open up the season and get a win at home, man. So that's what it's all about, building these wins and stacking these W's, man. And the best thing about winning two games in a row, you got a chance to win three in a row.
You know, the win is the thing, but then it's how you did it, Wesley. It seemed like you guys were able to wear the Seahawks out on both sides of the ball with your physicality. Is that how it felt to you as well? And then if that's the case, how satisfying is that as a player?
That's our mentality around here, man. Our head coach, man, from day one since over, he's always preached that, you know, let's be a smash mouth team. Let's be a physical team, most physical team ever. And that's just the way we go out there and play. We have a lot of fun on the football field. And, you know, we try to make guys pay. And I tell you what, when you got two running backs like we have, man, it's going to be a long season for anybody that lines up against those guys in the fourth quarter.
I'm glad you brought that up. DeMarco Murray ran for 115 yards yesterday. Derrick Henry had 54 yesterday. He had 92 the week before. So as a defense, how much does it fire you up to see your running backs and offensive line smashing people up like that?
Man, I'll tell you what, man. We go against these guys every week in practice, and you know, they shut us down, and then they go out on Sunday and do the same thing, man. So it's like, you know, we really do appreciate y'all giving us a great look, talking about our starting O-line, man. And it starts up front, man, from the D-line to the O-line. But those guys are very physical. And I think the biggest thing is when we brought Ben Jones in, he really just brought our whole offensive line together. And I think that was something that we were missing in the past. And now we have Ben here, man. He's communicating, making calls. And it shows out there on the football field. Our O-line plays with confidence, and they want to dominate guys. You know, Lawan, he's a very fiery guy that loves to be physical. So it's fun watching those guys, especially when they run the ball down people's throats like they did yesterday.
Wesley Woodyard joining us. You know, there was an interesting moment in the third quarter when you were part of a tackle and you were lying on the ground. And instead of getting up, you know where I'm going, you sort of crawled up and wriggled backwards on the field. And then later in the third, you made another hit and you rolled out of it on your head. What was going on out there for you?
Oh, man, I'm a kid, man. I'm enjoying this game. I'm having too much fun playing this game, man. You know, going into my 10th year, you know I can't play football forever, but, you know, man, I'm just having fun. And I told somebody, man, when you're balling out and making plays, sometimes you got to crawl backwards on them. And my head stands up directed towards my wife.
That was for the wife. That's
so,
great.
Man, it's good, man. I'm enjoying, man. My teammates are having fun, and I think that's what it's all about.
Playing
and inspiring people.
Wesley, there's something going on here. I mean, you're leading the team in tackles this season. It feels like you've taken your game to another level 10 years in. Mike Mularkey says you're playing like a man on a mission. Guys are not supposed to be doing this a decade in. So how have you been able to do it, and what's been your secret to your success so far this year?
My high school coach, man, he told me, you know, you always get better and make that your job. You always get better every year, every day, every play you play, you always get better. And I think that's something that, you know, coming into the league, being an undrafted guy, I've always had to outwork and work harder than everybody that was beside me and in front of me on the football field. So I just think it's a bunch of chips on my shoulder, man, that continue to motivate me until the day I'm done playing. And like I said, man, I'm a kid out there on the football field. I'm having fun and enjoying the game, and I'm just trying to inspire my teammates to be better.
Wesley Woodyard joining us. Now, before the game, your team and the Seahawks both stayed in the locker room during the national anthem. Can you take me back? What was your reaction when you heard the comments from Donald Trump on Friday night, and what went through your mind?
You know, man, it's sad, man, that our president would, you know, continue to call out guys that, you know, and all the guys that he's calling out and making protests, these are the same guys that are in a lot of communities in the United States and overseas, visiting troops, visiting other countries doing work, and you call us out of our homes. And I've never been called that by anybody, so, you know, it hurts us a lot, but at the same time, it's going to inspire us to be great and try to change this United States for the better, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
You know, Wesley, you're a part of it in the sense also that you're a captain of this team. You've been a captain everywhere you've been, so you're used to being a team leader. Can you give me a sense? What kind of conversations did you have as a group that led to the decision that you would stay in the locker room?
Well, we conversed with back and forth with some of the Seahawks players, and they told us their ideas about, you know, what should we do, whether we lock arms or whether we stay in. And I think it took us all the way up until maybe about two, three hours before game time to really finalize that decision on what we made. And, you know, man, like I said, I'm glad to be a part of history, you know, trying to change things. And you know, you get a lot of backlash with people talking about disrespecting the service and doing this. But, you know, I have two family members that served in the Army. My uncle was awarded the Purple Heart. He got his leg blown off. And my father-in-law, he served in Vietnam. He was a sniper in the Army. So, you know, those guys were the guys that really fought for us to have this freedom that we have now. And as much as military stuff and Army stuff that we do around here in Tennessee, we get no backlash from our troops here. So they support us 100%. And that's what it's all about, man. You know, to be a true American, you have to fight for each other's rights and your rights as well. And like I said, man, somebody has to take that step. And, you know, it's time for this injustice to stop.
Let's go to the phones. I promised you phone calls this segment. Here they are. Let's go to Minneapolis. Joe in Minneapolis, you are next. It's good to have you, Joe. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mr. Rome, or good morning in your time. Sounds like the president has done a pretty good job of uniting everybody, if you ask me. Just they happen to be against him, if that's what you want to believe. My take on this is that the commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief of the military, and he's kind of upset about his boys and his people doing F-16 flyovers and wheeling out that big flag, and there they are watching the very people they are sworn to defend taking the national anthem, kneeling at the national anthem. Now, I served two tours, one in the 82nd Airborne and one with the 173rd Airborne. So I kind of feel like this is incredible disrespect, and people can't tell me different unless you've walked in my shoes. This isn't like baseball where you can say, well, you never played the game. You've never played the game. I have. I know what it means to have lost family members and friends and loved ones across this planet. The last thing I want you to bring up is everybody saying that, well, this is not a disrespect to the flag, but it is a disrespect to the national symbol of our great country. So therefore, how would everybody look at it if somebody went out there with a blowtorch and lit a flag on fire before the game? I doubt the owners or very many people would show up at the next game.
Joe, let me ask you something. Joe, do you think that, for instance, then, are you equating kneeling with lighting the flag on fire? Is it, in your mind, is that the same thing?
Yeah, it is, to me. Yes, mm-hmm. It is, absolutely, to me and to many of my friends, mm-hmm. that lighting a flag on a fire or disrespecting the national anthem, there is zero difference. It is the same thing. In fact, one is actually worse than the other, and that's kneeling before the national anthem. And the reason why that is because this is a song that we stand there and we hold, we salute every morning as a flag is raised. It's there. It's in our hearts. It's what we live for and the home of the brave.
Let's go quickly to Ken in Sacramento. Ken, nice to have you on. How are you?
Thanks, Romy, for taking the call. Ironically, what he just said is exactly the reason why burning the flag is the same as taking a knee. It's a form of protest protected by the U.S. Constitution. The court has held that flag burning is a protected expression of freedom free speech in America. Kind of ironic that the people that want to protect the Constitution to talk about serving and duties don't know what they're protecting it for. It's kind of also hypocritical, Jim, that if you're going to have people out there cheering and rooting for what J.J. Watt is doing, they're not telling him to be quiet. You can't pick and choose how you want your players to express themselves. J.J. good, Cap bad, I'm sorry. Either all is the same or all need to shut up. The other thing is, it's incredible that you can have this president make a statement about, you know, these SOBs need to be fired when it took him prodding by practically every media outlet and in people in his administration to see a word about Charlottesville. So you can't help but see the juxtaposition in the two positions. You don't say anything about white supremacy, but you call them black ball players SOBs and asking for them to be fired. And finally, the last thing, that the most outrageous thing, is people are forgetting the president is elected to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. This president is up here encouraging private companies to fire their employees for expressing their freedom of speech in America. He's supposed to be protecting the Constitution, not taking shots at owners and players and telling them to get rid of them if they defend him. This is a step away from fascism, and people need to understand and recognize that what this president is doing is wrong. And if you don't think he's breaking it down on racial lines, you're surely mistaken, and your head is in the sand. I'm sorry. I'm thankful for the previous callers. His time and service for our company, our country. But quite frankly, if you thought you were fighting so Americans wouldn't have the right to protest, then you were fighting for the wrong reason.
How do you like that? Trapper in Crescent City. Hey, Trapper, you see what we did there? There was no way they thought that you were in Crescent City. They had no idea it was you, bro. What's
How
up, my
doing,
brother?
Jim? Good to hear you.
You too.
And thank you for taking my call on the way back from C-Town, where they gave me some hope. Thanks for taking my call. And again, this is about our cowboy president once again senselessly doing anything he can to divide this country, or more to the point, exploit the divisions. You mentioned divisions that sadly exist, Jim. He knew he had a calmer crowd in Alabama on Friday night in prime time. He knows his health care bill is going down the commode, so the usual tactic of pivot, which a great word for dodge and obfuscate. And let's not forget for a minute, this isn't about patriotism of the players. It's about the racial, and it's so sad. Not since George Wallace has any nationally recognized politician so exploited the issue of color to his benefit. You want to fire men for representing their constitutional right that men and women have died for, Mr. President? Of course. Forget about the slam dunk lawsuits against management that you wouldn't have to pay. Like my cousins in Jersey City who you stiffed on their Atlantic City drywall contracts, you lying SOB. I don't have to take either side in the standard Neil argument, Jimmy, because in reality, there shouldn't be one. The only issue is, do you support an individual's right to free speech? Yes, Mr. President, the one that protected the Nazis in Charlottesville, some of whom you deem to be very fine people. And to anyone out there that has a problem with Steph Curry declining to attend the White House Warriors reception, where were you, where were your voices in 2015 when Tom Brady was the only patriot who refused to attend the White House reception hosted by President Obama? If that didn't offend you, you forfeited your right to bag on Curry, and you're a hypocrite. Much gratitude and respect to Steeler Alejandro Villanueva for your service to our country, and equal support for your standing for the anthem, as I do for those that have knelt, and LeBron James. I like to believe, Jim, that this flag of ours is big enough to cloak all of them, and that's a hill I'd die on. Last, a belated weekend happy birthday to Bruce. I got lucky and scored on the lottery. I will be in New York City for Bruce on Broadway, so that should be cool. Tramps like us, babe. Thanks for the dime, Jimmy.
You got it, Trapper. Great to have you. Clones, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you. Check back here tomorrow for more Daily Jungle and the Jim Rome podcast, which drops tomorrow as well. See you then. I'm out.